Hello and welcome. This is Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and today we are talking healthcare costs. Healthcare costs in the U.S. have ballooned. They now account for 20%, a fifth of the entire U.S. gross domestic product. Here in California, we spend more than $360 billion a year on healthcare. That's about 14% of our state's GDP. So, what's happening? As a nation, we spend 2 to 3 times more than other developed countries, but our healthcare system performance is ranking 37th in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. So while the ACA, the Affordable Health Care Act, it did significantly increase the number of people who were insured, it didn't do as good a job in reining in the costs for healthcare. And now, Obamacare could be dismantled by congressional Republicans and the Trump administration. So all of this has now reignited the debate over how to go about fixing our healthcare system. California may have come up with a solution. It's not original, but it's working elsewhere. It's single payer. On June 1st, the California Senate passed SB 562. It's called the Healthy California Act, and that bill seeks to provide comprehensive, quality, universal health care to all Californians, and the other idea is to try to control health care costs. California's Senate Appropriations Committee is estimating that the Healthy California Act would cost about $400 billion a year, but analysis that was commissioned by the bill's sponsor, the CNA, the California Nurses Association, estimates that the state spending level would actually fall by 18%, and that businesses and residents could reap significant benefits. Of course, there are critics. There are those who say there are major drawbacks to this bill. So let's talk about what the bill does and doesn't do and why single payer may or may not be the answer here in California. We have two guests. Catherine Ho will be joining us later. She's a reporter covering healthcare and medical technology for the business desk at the San Francisco Chronicle. Before joining the paper in 2017, she worked at the Washington Post and the LA Times. And also joining me is Dr. Nadara Porat. She is the Director of Research for the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. Dr. Porat is also a professor of health policy and management at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. She is an expert on health insurance and reform topics in California, and she's an expert on just how the healthcare delivery system may better address disparities and perhaps even improve healthcare outcomes in the state. She's joining us on the line from Los Angeles. Dr. Porat, let's start with you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start out with SB 562. Back in February, California Senators Ricardo Lara and Tony Atkins introduced that bill. It's the Healthy California Act. And the details at that time, back in February, were pretty limited. So several months have passed now. What details do we know about the bill? What and whom would it cover? And what and whom would it not cover?
Right. So the bill has, further detail has been provided by the authors of the bill through amendments, and the bill now has more details about a governing body or a program that would be established to implement, to design and implement this coverage program. There are details about the benefits that are going to be far more extensive than the essential health benefits under the ACA, more likely modeled under the Medi-Cal and the Medicare programs, where it particularly under Medi-Cal, it includes long-term care and some of the other services that typically you don't see covered by the health insurance company plans that we have available to us. There are other provisions on, Not as much provisions about exactly how it'll be financed, but some detail about the financing. There's some details about whether health insurance policies can be sold in the state by other insurance companies that could likely compete with what's provided under the program.
So, bottom line, something like 15 million more Californians, some of whom are uninsured, others are underinsured. This plan would bring those 15 million Californians into the system. Is that right?
Right. So the idea for the bill is not only it's single payer, but it's comprehensive, and it will cover every California resident, regardless of citizenship, regardless of income.
You know, so many of us have seen bumper stickers, you know, we want single payer. Single payer is the answer. Could you just give a brief explanation of what single payer means?
Right. So currently, under the current system, we have lots of different organizations and government entities that pay for health care. We have Medi-Cal, we have Medicare, we have the VA system separately, we have the military separately. There are employers that are paying for the cost of coverage. Lots of different entities, health insurance companies, are involved in this whole process. So instead of having all these layers of different payers, a single payer would be more similar to the Canadian healthcare system, where the government actually pays for health care that's provided to the citizens. So one single entity will pay for costs, pays the cost of health care.
So literally the government becomes the payer, because now hospitals and clinics and physician groups, they are essentially replicating their efforts by dealing with numerous insurers. And that single payer plan would serve to reduce the administrative costs, because you would only be dealing with that one entity. Is that right?
Exactly. So there's so much effort that goes on for a provider such as a hospital or a physician to bill for services. You know, they're dealing with multiple entities who might have different ways of processing claims or different utilization review processes where they determine whether a claim is appropriate, lots of different layers. And so the providers have to, you know, they would have to prepare the bills according to what is required of them from that particular entity. They will have to then submit those bills, then they will have to negotiate it. If it gets rejected, there's a tremendous amount of work just from the provider side on billing for the services that they have provided.
So it's just more efficient.
That's the idea, mm-hmm. that you will reduce that administrative responsibility, not only from the providers, but also on the other side, insurance companies spend a lot of time and energy processing claims. So you're sort of trying to reduce all of those administrative aspects of dealing with claims.
And the other structural change would be from reducing the cost for prescription drugs, which is just a huge part of the healthcare costs. Yes.
Yes, prescription drugs have increasingly become a larger share of the healthcare expenditures, and there's lots of reasons for it. You know, they have now more advanced medications that work differently, and some of them are very, very expensive, and there appears to be a trend in particularly more of those types of medications being available. Therefore, the cost of prescription are rising.
Let's say hello now to Catherine Ho. She's joining us in studio. You are a reporter, and you cover healthcare and medical technology issues at the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks for being here, Catherine.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, this is one of the things that you've studied extensively, and we were just talking with the doctor about why do you think that maybe California might be ready to seriously take up the issue of single payer now? Certainly, Governor Brown, this has been one of his pet projects for decades now. Is it likely that the state is somehow better positioned to really take it up now?
So I think there's a few things happening right now at the national level that are making the timing very interesting for this effort here in California. We've seen the House pass a bill last month that would change a lot of the things that the Affordable Care Act did here in California, would reduce a lot of the subsidies that low-income people get to buy health insurance. And, you know, even though the Senate hasn't come out with their version of that bill yet, I think there's a lot of concern here in California about people losing their health insurance or getting versions of health insurance that cover fewer things for them or would be more expensive. And so I think this effort here in California comes partly out of that. I don't know that this this particular bill is likely to be passed. I think most of the people I've talked to in the health policy world are skeptical that this will be the one that passes. And the reason why is because we haven't seen the financing proposal for it yet. We haven't seen how it'll be paid for. So it did pass the Senate and the Assembly. We'll see what the Assembly does. There's a lot to be done in this bill that hasn't been done yet that we'll have to see first before it moves forward.
Well, certainly, arguably, the politics in California are much different than the national politics around this issue. Does that mean even if this bill doesn't pass, that something at some point that has single payer in the title and description could pass in California?
I think it's conceivable. You know, California is kind of a famously progressive state, and the single-payer issue has been very popular with especially liberal Democrats, progressive Democrats. And we saw a lot of that stuff come out during the presidential election with support for Bernie Sanders, who talked about single-payer and universal health care. So I do think it's one of those issues that will keep coming up. It's come up many, many times before at the state level. It's never quite made it across the finish line. But I think it's something that isn't going to go away, and we're going to keep talking about it.
A lot of us worry if it'll pass in time to fill the gap that might exist if the Affordable Care Act is repealed. Could it actually get through the hurdles in California in time to be a stopgap measure?
I think that's yet to be determined. Some people who actually support single payer in theory would actually prefer to see the Affordable Care Act continue. And so a lot of people who think it's a good idea to have single payer in concept are a little unsure.
This is one of those subjects that people talk about at the coffee shops. You walk past people in the bank line at the grocery store, everybody's talking about it. And we have two guests today who literally can answer questions that are still looming out there. So what are your thoughts on a single-payer health care plan in California? Would you even support single-payer if it meant no out-of-pocket costs? What if it meant paying slightly higher in taxes? Do you work in health care? And what are your thoughts on the single-payer plan that's moving through the California legislature right now? Are you a business owner? Are you an employer? What are your thoughts on single payer? Are you concerned that it might actually be a job killer, which is one of the concerns that critics have expressed? We hope you'll give us a call, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you could post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Good morning. As a recipient of Medicare, I've had Medicare due to disability for the past 30 years, and I think it as a model is absolutely marvelous. What I'd like to ask the guests is their opinion of the approach going state by state as opposed to working for and advocating for John Conyers' 676 bill, which is national, and you don't have all the problems of different states having different rules for insurance and all of the problems with selling insurance cross state lines, et cetera, and so forth. And I was just wondering what they thought about switching the emphasis to a national bill as opposed to the state-by-state plan.
Dr. Nadera Parad, you are a professor of health policy and management. What are your thoughts on the state-by-state sort of piecemeal approach as opposed to a national approach?
Well, you know, I think if you look back historically, the piecemeal approach is how healthcare policy has happened in the United States. The examples of national efforts that have been successful in the long term are in 1965 Medicare and passage of Medicaid. And then after that, we had a long period of time where we did have, like, you know, some other programs that were implemented, but none of them were far-reaching until the ACA. And if you were observing what was happening with the passage of the ACA, you realize that that was a very, very close call, but it succeeded. So we don't really have a long history of successful national efforts. That's why, the currently, you know, the states are trying to deal with this individually. You know, we've had Vermont that has tried to do that, and now California is trying to do this. It's just you have so many states that fundamentally are not interested in, you know, making such an overarching change. And I think that's the reason we're going about it this way.
And there's certainly state-by-state differences. Headline yesterday was that Anthem has decided to pull out of several counties in the state of Ohio, that leaving, you know, thousands of people uncovered. So the challenges differ from one state to another, too. I imagine that argues perhaps for a national plan that doesn't leave one state behind. Would that be your assessment, Dr. Perot?
Yes, I think, I mean, obviously, you know, I've spent my entire career, you know, in improving access to care for everyone, and health insurance is a crucial aspect of that to be able to improve health care for everyone. But having, you know, fundamentally, of course, we should go about it that way. Practically is a different story.
All right. We have lots of folks who, once again, are worried about the state of their own health care and whether a single payer is the answer. Let's go to Doug in San Leandro. Hi, Doug.
Yes, thanks for having me on. So one of the things that can be very frustrating in this discussion is that the Affordable Care Act, which currently exists, and single payer, which we're working on in California, there are many people that see these two as oppositional. That you're for single payer and you're for the Affordable Care Act. It is so crucial we defend the Affordable Care Act, because if the Affordable Care Act goes away in the way that the Republicans have proposed, $24 billion in federal funds would be lost to the state budget. We would not be able to finance a single payer program without the federal money we get for both public and private health insurance in the state of California. And it's really important that people understand that both of these things have to go together. We have to defend the Affordable Care Act while we continue to try to fight for improved federal policies, while we also fight for single-payer in California.
Okay, Doug, thanks for your question. We want to remind you, when you call in, just turn down your radio. Dr. Perot, would you mind addressing that question?
Well, I think this is an important point that the listener just brought up. It is this particular legislation is intended to build on the ACA, and you know, if the ACA was not in place, and all the funds that are sort of will be used with the ACA to fund this legislation, some of it were to disappear, then you know, we have to figure out how are this package of benefits and all of the different aspects of the bill can be implemented with a reduction in the federal funding that comes into it. It's a very important question, very important aspect to consider.
Dr. Perot, I know we only have you for the first half of the show, and so I want to make sure that if possible we get as many of our listeners' questions answered as possible before we have to let you go. So let's take another call. Mary Virginia in Oakland. Go ahead. Thanks for being here.
Hi, I just actually had more of a comment. I'm working with a group of folks in the East Bay, and we're just seeing, like, folks in their 20s and 30s, young people who it was assumed didn't care about healthcare, right? We had groups like the Young Invincibles trying to convince people to get on insurance. And we're seeing young people really, really care about this issue. There's a lot of energy because it affects them so much as far as being tethered to jobs that they don't like, not being able to kind of pursue creative projects, and then also the sort of fear of medical debt since we're already saddled so much with student debt. So I was wondering if you could talk about how important this is to sort of millennials and like the next generation of folks who see medical need as a real financial risk.
Dr. Brahm, you can start with you, and then Catherine, you're a millennial. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it too. Dr. Brahm?
Right. So I think that this is a really good point that the additional awareness, perhaps due to the ACA, in terms of the importance of health insurance coverage, and the listener is right, a lot of people, young people particularly, had not really worried about getting health insurance coverage because when you're healthy, of course, you don't think about those things. But what everybody has to remember is that, you know, unfortunate illness can happen to everyone. And even if not illness, simple things like an unanticipated pregnancy could happen to young people particularly. And, you know, the medical debt is an important issue. And if the person is responsible for this and they may not be able to pay for it, and when they don't pay for it, then it becomes the responsibility of the government and the taxpayer to pay for that. So including the young people in the insurance is very important. And also the fact that young people, because they are younger and healthier, don't use a lot of services means that their participation in the health in any kind of a health insurance is actually beneficial to the entire population, because they will pay in their premiums typically, and then they will not take out as much. So the same way, if you had everyone participating under this plan, also it could be beneficial for the overall population.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine, I think one of the concerns about if the ACA is repealed, already the mandate part of the formula is under threat. If people are not young, healthy people, are not compelled to buy in, then the whole thing collapses, yes?
That's right. Young people, because they are, they tend to be healthier and spend less on health care for the reasons some of the doctors just outlined. They play a really important role in making the Affordable Care Act work, because the idea of that law was we're all part of the same pool. And if the more young, healthy people you have in it, the better the overall pool is and can kind of balance out the sicker people.
And, of course, the Senate bill that's being considered in California, SB 562, that's an important one of the legs on the stool, that obviously you can't have a bill that works if everybody's not in the pool, right?
That's right.
All right. We want to thank Dr. Nadira Parah. We know that we only had you for a short time, but Director of Research for the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research, also a professor of Health Policy and Management at UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. We appreciate your insights as an insurance and reform advocate in the California discussion about health care. Thank you so much for being here, and we hope that some of the questions that you have, that you'll continue to send us via email. And Dr. Parab, we appreciate your expertise.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, indeed. We're still here with Catherine Ho. She's a reporter covering healthcare and medical technology at the San Francisco Chronicle. She'll be here after the break. Stay with us.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call, on the phone, sending an email, or by going to yourcallradio.org, the website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call us at toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. More than 1,600 KALW members make an ongoing monthly donation to support local public radio. Sustaining members help keep KALW innovative and independent, and you can join them. All the details are at KALW.org. Just click the support tab.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. We are talking healthcare. And once again, it's one of those subjects that everybody talks about at the coffee shop. People are very concerned. And we have an expert here who has covered the issue. Catherine Ho is a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle covering healthcare and medical technology. For those of you just joining us, we're podcasting the show. You can find out more information at yourcallradio.org. And there you can listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. And we love your show ideas, too. You can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org or give us a call at 866-798-8255. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll talk with drivers of ride-hailing services from Uber to Lyft. What are some of the issues facing those drivers? What are the public safety concerns? And how are drivers able to make a living in this rideshare economy? What are your thoughts on how taxi cab companies are regulated differently than Uber and Lyft? And what kind of policies would you like to see regulating these kinds of businesses? We hope you'll join us. In the meantime, we are talking healthcare, and we welcome your calls, 866-798-8255. Everybody wants to know, how do you pay for single payer? And critics of the bill that's currently being considered, Catherine, is that the price tag that's being put forward is just overly optimistic. Even the most conservative estimates say that the plan would cost about maybe 150 or maybe anywhere from $105 to $150 billion more. So how to pay for that?
Right. That's one of the big questions that we haven't seen answered by the bill just yet. There have been a couple analyses that have been issued about possible ways to pay for this bill. One of them would include proposing a sales tax. Another would be a tax on businesses that make over a certain dollar figure. I believe it's $2 million a year. So that would be a tax imposed. It's hard to imagine a way to pay for this type of bill that doesn't include new taxes. So I think for consumers, the question is, would you be paying more in taxes under that system, or would you be paying more under that system than you currently are in, you know, insurance premiums and copays and things like that? We don't know the answer to that yet.
That was one of Bernie Sanders' arguments, too. You know, taxes might have to be increased, but it would more than offset possibly what you're already paying in premiums. An email from Bill says, in the world's sixth largest economy, which is California's economy, are there any potential additional revenues that could be used? And other than sales tax, because some people consider that rather regressive.
There is California passed a tobacco tax last year, and that raised, I believe, over $1 billion. So there's some supporters of single payer system that say, well, that tax was put in place and it was meant to go to healthcare access, healthcare services. So maybe some of that money could be used towards a single payer system. So that is being talked about.
Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. You have a question. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
Just turn your radio down for us, please.
I thought I had it. Just a second.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Is that better now?
Much better. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Sure.
Couple of things. First of all, with regard to how this can be implemented, the Canadians started out province by province. They didn't do it totally across the board nationally. I don't know if it was Alberta or British Columbia that started it, but there was one province that went for a single payer, and then the Canadian system kicked in over time. So there's there's no reason that the states couldn't do this. And California, by the way, dwarfs any Canadian province with regard to its economy. So this state, if they can afford it, if they could afford to do it in a province, certainly California could. It would require a considerable amount of restructuring of taxes in the state of California. But people are already paying taxes that could be used in this. Employers could be paying more into this. The pharmaceutical companies, you'd have to change the tax system, and the Democrats have not shown a great deal of a desire to do that over the years, but that's the way you would do it. You would have to finance it through changes in taxation, and that could be done.
It seems so simple, and yet it's such an intractable problem. Catherine, your thoughts on why Canadians seem to get it right, other developed economies seem to be able to do this. Why is this such an intractable problem in America?
Well, I think the caller hit one of the main points, which is taxes. It's hard to impose new taxes. It's hard to get people on board with that. There were a couple of recent polls on single payer here in California that show that majority of people do support it. But then when you ask them again, would you support it knowing that you have to pay more taxes? And that number was smaller. The percentage of people who support it were smaller. So I think that's a big hurdle to clear. I think another hurdle is, at least like with this particular bill, it would really restructure the way the healthcare industry works. It would make the role of private health insurers a lot smaller, because the language of this bill would actually prohibit those private insurers from offering benefits that the state would be covering. So, you know, I think we'll see some pushback from insurance companies. The health industry is always a big lobbying player in these kinds of issues, and I think they have a lot of concerns about some of the issues that have been outlined in this bill.
Because the bill actually kind of moves those companies out. It takes the middleman out of the equation, yes?
That's right. So the state would be paying instead of private insurance companies.
Mm-hmm. And for many who were looking for a much more stringent national plan, that was their concern, that somehow the Affordable Care Act still factors in insurance companies.
That's right. Insurance companies play a big role in the Affordable Care Act, and we're seeing some of them pull out of markets in other states because the law has not worked out quite the way they expected. They were losing a lot of money.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes, you know, people are of two minds about it. Well, you know, I don't want to have a nationalized system that feels too much like socialist, hell, you know, nationalized health care, but I want to pay less in my premiums. So people are of two minds about it. So sometimes the best way to figure out where you are on an issue is to determine who's for it and who's against it. So who's supporting the bill that's currently before the Assembly in California? Who's for it? Who's against it?
The Nurses Association is the main group that is for it. The groups that are against it are Kaiser, which is a big player here, especially in Northern California, and the trade group that represents health insurance plans.
So Kaiser is huge here, as you said. What's behind their opposition?
So Kaiser is kind of a unique system here. I think probably a lot of our listeners are Kaiser members. So Kaiser is an integrated system, so they provide the insurance and the medical care, so the doctors, and they pay for it on the insurance side. So Kaiser's argument in this, and they've gone pretty hard against it, is that their model would not be able to continue in California under this proposal. It would basically break up their integrated system by essentially taking out the insurance piece. And so it's hard to imagine how a system like Kaiser would work in this plan.
Well, doctors are, you know, of two minds on this too, because in effect the proposed program would pay less for healthcare services by paying doctors at the rates that they are paid under Medicare. There's like a three-tiered system, as I understand it. So there's Medicare, and then there's a second level, and then there's the highest amount of reimbursement to doctors, which is what organizations like Kaiser and hospitals are currently paying the doctors. So I'm sure that the doctors would rather get the higher commercial rate Some doctors in California are saying, you know, they're tired of spending so much time dealing with insurance companies and paperwork and some of the bureaucracy. So are doctors of two minds on this as well?
I think it depends on probably the individual doctor that you talk to. The payment rates you raised is an interesting one because we actually don't know what those rates would be because we haven't seen the details on that yet. One of the things that this bill would do is create a board or an agency that negotiates those rates with providers. We haven't seen what those numbers are, whether they would be better or worse than what providers are getting paid now. But that definitely is a big question that remains.
We have an email from Pauline. She says, in the UK, we pay national insurance. It's set at a percentage taken from your income, with the exception of those over retirement age. Has this ever been considered, that approach?
Nationally, I don't think we have ever really come close to that. We've come closer at the state level many times. I think there's more of an appetite here at the local level than there is nationally.
So let's ask, what are the questions do you have for our guest here, Catherine Ho? What are your thoughts on single-payer health care in California? Would you support single-payer even if it meant more in the way of taxes? What if it meant paying higher taxes but lower administrative health care costs? And we really want to hear from anyone who works in the health care industry, a doctor, a nurse. What are your thoughts on the single-payer bill that's now moving through the California legislature? And businesses, there's a great deal of lobbying by businesses who say that it's a job killer. So are you an employer? What are your thoughts on single-payer health care? Would you support it if it meant that you didn't have to pay for health care for your employees other than through state a health care tax? And what if it reduced your overall costs for providing health care? We want you to give us a call, 866-798-8255, or drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment at yourcallradio.org. So the bottom line is, if this gets over the next hurdle, then what? What happens?
All right. So the assembly would have to approve it, and the two houses would have to reconcile the bill. And if it does, in fact, impose new taxes, it would have to get a majority vote in both houses. I believe the deadline for doing that would be September 15th.
This came up during the Schwarzenegger administration, and it got killed at the governor's desk. What's likely to happen with a Governor Brown administration who's been a longtime advocate for this? Is this the bill that he wants?
We don't think so. He's made some remarks. His reception to this has been kind of cool, and his main concerns seem to be financial. So, you know, the governor's office is concerned about balancing the budget, and his remarks were something to the extent of, how are we going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm. And certainly the cost, even the most complimentary plans say it would be about $105 billion a year more. So where does that come from other than taxes, right?
Right.
All right, let's go to William in Belvedere. Thanks for joining us. Hi, William.
Yes, thank you. There's a sort of a basic issue here that I think is being missed. We have single-payer health care in the form of Medicare, and everyone who has Medicare loves Medicare, and the rates are fixed by the government, and people with Medicare love it. Wall Street Journal study showed that the overhead for Medicare is 3.5%, whereas with the private insurance industry, it's somewhere around 20 to 23%. If you have less money going to the insurers, and all the insurers do, they really just handle money. And very often they decide what not to cover and when not to cover it. Whereas when you get rid of that 20%, you can allocate it for medical care. I don't understand what all the confusion is. I can only believe that it's being sowed by the insurers to make it seem more complicated than it is.
Probably not too far off the mark. Well, certainly that argument has been made before, Catherine, that we already have single payer and it works. It's called Medicare or the VA. So if we have a model that seems to be working, and many of the people who are using those as their medical care why not go down that road? What's the big pushback?
That's a great question. I don't know that there's an answer to that. You know, like the caller mentioned, most or many Medicare beneficiaries or recipients love it. It's simple. They get the coverage they need, and we all pay into that system and get the benefits from that system. So I think it goes back to a couple of things that we talked about earlier, which is the private health insurance industry is a for-profit model, and they play a big role in the way that everyone other than those on Medicare receive their health insurance. And I think it's in their best interest to maintain that system. And it's a very, very difficult politically to get past those hurdles as well.
I think, too, people are concerned about losing options. They want to have more choices, not fewer. And to what extent is that true? I mean, under a single-payer nationalized plan or single-payer under a state plan, your options are basically one.
Well, under this plan, you actually would be able to go see any doctor you wanted and go to any hospital or doctor's office. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is who pays for it. It would be the state who pays for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we hear a lot of concerns from people saying they don't want the government controlling their health care. That's not actually what this would be. It would just be kind of simplifying who pays for it, not necessarily what kind of care you get or where you get it.
And isn't that the basic misunderstanding that people have, that somehow their choices will be restricted? So that's that. If we can sort of unpack that, that's what I think has so many people who are against single payer concerned about that approach. So again, that is not true. You continue to go to your doctor. You continue to have your options. It's just paid for through the state. Yes?
That's right.
All right, let's go to Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yes, I'm concerned. I have Medicare Advantage with, you know, with Kaiser, and I love it. I mean, I love Kaiser, but I'm also a big advocate for single payer. But I'm just wondering, you know, what would happen with Medicare Advantage through Kaiser with single payer? Would Kaiser just, you know, vanish or what?
It's a good question. A lot of people are happy with the Kaiser model. Once again, under this plan, that goes away. So what are their options?
Well, Kaiser hasn't really come out and said they would, for example, leave the state if this bill were to pass. They haven't gone that far. But they've made it very clear there would be a lot of challenges to their business model under the system. And so to I don't know if I can quite answer the caller's question, but I think it's an important one. So under this plan, basically everybody, including Medicare patients, would be put into this same single-payer pool. So their benefits, you know, since this caller's was through Kaiser, I think that's a big question because we don't know what's going to happen with Kaiser. We do know that the way this bill was written, you know, it wouldn't disrupt the benefits to people under Medicare. But, you know, if that plan is administered through a private health insurer, I think it's a big question mark.
I have a hunch as this thing moves forward, we're going to start to see a lot of lobbying, television commercials, warning people about what would happen under single payer, what they might lose. So once again, I think people are likely to be very confused and concerned about what this actually means. But one of the studies indicates that there would actually be savings for certainly low-income families who, according to the study, would see their health care costs go down about 5.5%. Middle-income families would see about a 9% savings. And those who got their insurance through employers would save about 2.5%. So, again, there's going to be a lot of information and a bit of disinformation, I think, floating around out there. So how do people make a decision about where they stand on this, Catherine?
That's a good question. I think the best thing people can do is, you know, read read the news. You know, we'll be covering this, and most statewide media outlets are covering this as well. I've seen some great stories out there kind of explaining what this would and would not do. You could also get in touch with your representative. You know, it's this is something that the Senate took up, and you should go to their office with questions and concerns.
We had a caller who wanted to know about, what about something like a U.S. healthcare corps, sort of like what the Marine Corps does, providing healthcare for Marines and former Marines? Is there any such thing as sort of a healthcare corps? That's what the caller was asking. Any thoughts on that as a model? I can see your face. You're wondering now, just what would that look like? How would that work? All right.
That's an interesting point.
Mm.
It's hard to conceive. I can't wrap my mind around that. It's not a bad idea, though.
All right, let's go to Ed in Menlo Park. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
I had a quick comment and then a question. My comment is, I guess when they do these surveys, they ask people, if you had to pay taxes, would you still support single payer? But the real question that they should have asked, speaking as a statistician, is what I am, is if your out-of-pocket expense is less than or equal to your current out-of-pocket expense, would you still support it? And that's the question they have not asked. And so, you know, and that's just a survey design issue there. And I think they should ask the right question when they pose that question to people. They might get a different answer. In other words, there'd be more support is what I would predict.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have Medicare and I have a private supplement to pick up the coinsurance, the 20% coinsurance and the deductible. No one speaks about that with regard to single payer. Is there going to be that concept where it's like Part B of the Medicare, where you still are responsible for a deductible and coinsurance, or are we talking about no expenses whatsoever? How does that impact those of us who are disabled or seniors, which currently operate under that plan, where, for example, I have a United Healthcare plan through AARP. Mm-hmm. I pay a monthly fee on that, and then they pick up the 20% coinsurance and the deductible in return.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know, I haven't heard anyone speak to that.
Catherine, does SB 562 address that?
It does, kind of vaguely. So that option would still exist if you want to buy supplemental insurance to cover the things that the state would not be covering. So the state would cover, quote unquote, most of your major medical needs, hospital stays, prescription drugs, preventive medicine, things like that. It does not cover things, for example, like plastic surgery. And so when I spoke to Senator Lahr's office about this, that was one thing they brought up, which was if you want to buy a supplemental plan to cover things that the state wouldn't cover under this, you can continue to do that.
I think one of the other things that people had as a concern when the national plan was implemented was the bureaucracy. Who gets to decide what gets covered and what doesn't? I think that's when the term death panels happened. So if there is an additional bureaucracy that's going to be set up around the Healthy California Act, how concerned should people be about who gets to decide what gets covered?
That's a great question. I don't know that we know the answer to that yet, because that's actually a role that insurance companies right now play. And with the reduced role for insurance companies, I'm not sure who would take on that responsibility or what that system would look like.
And is there any way to have some kind of a federal and state cooperation going forward, or are they kind of mutually exclusive?
So the federal government would have to play a role in this because the state would have to get some form of a waiver that would allow the repurposing of federal Medi-Cal and Medicare dollars. So when you look at one of these studies, it says this whole thing would cost $400 billion, but $200 billion of it is already spent on health care through Medicare and Medi-Cal. But that's assuming that the feds sign off on this and we can repurpose that money, which some of the health policy experts I talked to said that it just doesn't work that way. And they're not even sure if it's legal. But yes, there would have to be the federal government would have to play a role in this.
One of the critiques is that it would be, quote unquote, a job killer. Is there any truth in there?
Well, we won't know until we see the details of the financing, but we do know that one of the bill's supporters commissioned this study done at University of Massachusetts that proposed a couple different taxes for this, and one of them would be on businesses. And the other analysis suggested one way to do it would be a payroll tax, so that would also be on employers. So would it be a job killer? I mean, I think you may see the business groups argue that because of those potential extra taxes. I think it's a little premature to say until we've seen the bill actually say this is how we would pay for it.
Okay. I think we have time for one more call, and it's you, Carrie, in San Francisco. Thanks for being here.
Hi, my name is Carrie. I'm a nurse practitioner, and I'm also a patient with a lot of chronic health issues. And I have two quick points. One is that we do have a National Health Service Corps. You know, different than the Marine Corps, but similar concept. We've had it for a long time, and it's woefully underfunded. So me and a lot of other people have been applying to it so we can continue to provide primary care to underserved communities, and it's underfunded, and it's being more underfunded and on the table for maybe elimination with the current national budget. So the National Health Service Corps exists, and I would hope that your health reporter would know about that and let us know about that. And then the other point is that you were talking about the barrage of information coming at us, and I think we really need to be aware of who is funding that information and where that information is coming from. A lot of the information is from the lobby groups for the health insurance industry, and they have a financial interest in making sure that this doesn't get passed because it will cut into their profits that we're all paying for right now. So I think when analyzing all that information, it's really important to think about where that comes from. And I have been a supporter of single payer for a long time as both a provider and a patient that deals with our really disjointed system.
All right. Thanks a lot, Carrie. Catherine, we have about 30 seconds left. You want to respond? Well, we know that there's going to be a barrage of information and disinformation coming at us. This is one of those subjects. And we are so grateful for you taking the time to be here, Catherine, as a healthcare specialist and reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Also want to thank Dr. Nadira Pera, Director of Research at UCLA Center for Health Policy Research, for joining us for part of the program. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in and for your emails and phone calls. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation with ride-hailing drivers from Uber and Lyft. On Monday, San Francisco subpoenaed Uber and Lyft records. They're investigating whether the companies are providing service to poor neighborhoods and are they impacting our traffic. So we hope you'll join us. Your call is produced by KALW. You can listen to past shows at yourcallradio.org. Lara Flynn produced today's show. Phil Hartman is chief engineer. Kevin Vance is the studio engineer. You can email us at feedback@yourcall.org. Thanks again for listening. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this has been Your Call with Renee Kemp and you.